here we go with a March Madness round one and round two postmortem is what we'll call this. If you are like me and you just finished the Arizona TCU game, then you're exhausted. And I'm a little hyped up, but I'm a little exhausted from all the games over the past 4 days, basically watching every single game that I absolutely could. And it has been a super interesting NCAA, not one that we all thought was how it was going to be. That started with St. Peter's with over Kentucky. Who saw that one coming? We did not. But also we did our episode last week where we talked about the stats, KenPom, all that kind of stuff. And we had kind of a topsy-turvy, not so great start to that with calling a lot of those upsets. Last year, we called about every one of them. This year, not so much. And that is the nature of college basketball. And so it is what it is. Sometimes some years you're going to be able to call it and see the board, and sometimes you are not. So if you're like me, your bracket's kind of halfway busted, but you're still in play. So that's kind of how I am. I don't know if a lot of people out there had Kentucky, Iowa as their championship. If you did, sorry. But we're going to kind of recap round one and round two. This is not going to be a lengthy thing. I'm not going through each and every game, just kind of hit some highlights, some complaints that I have, hit kind of a recap of the stats that we talked about last week for the upsets and the NCAA champion predictions, as well as hit some games. And we're going to end with some underrated and overrated, because if you watched as many games as I did, there was a lot of things that stuck out to you that are annoying. Like, let's just call them what they are. They're annoying. Or you just don't like them, or maybe you did like them. So I've got an underrated, overrated at the end. So this will be fun. We are going to have an episode coming out tomorrow or Wednesday, tomorrow being Tuesday or potentially Wednesday. Bringing Brandon back, we are going to actually talk about the Sweet 16 matchups since they are all finalized. We know the matchups, we know the times, we know the days. So we're going to get back in the lab and put out a pod for you, kind of talking about those matchups, predictions, and hopefully that will get a little bit better, hopefully a little more in depth. So we'll actually have come out of the Sweet 16 pretty good, looking pretty good anyways from a prediction standing. So let's start with some actual games that were of the most interest to me, that I thought were the most entertaining. And I hope you agree on these, but this is not necessarily a ranking, but these were kind of the from the top to bottom. I guess we can go ahead and call them a ranking that I thought were the most dramatic, the most fun games of the first two rounds. And I have to start with not the game that just ended, which was incredibly dramatic and super awesome. I have to start with the North Carolina Baylor game. And North Carolina, that looked like it was dead in the water. North Carolina built a 25-point lead in the second half. And Brady Manek elbows someone in the face. He's ejected. And Baylor goes on a furious run. And it gets to something I have a complaint later, but the officials just completely swallowed their whistles against Baylor. And UNC was playing to not lose. Baylor comes back to force overtime and still couldn't win. They could not beat UNC. Now, I know they're without one of their best players in Cryer, but to me, UNC being down two starters and in foul trouble, and you still couldn't win in overtime, that was an incredible game. So that was my favorite game of, I guess I should say, the final 10 minutes is what I should say, really. That was my favorite 10-minute stretch. So maybe my favorite game should be the one that actually just ended, the Arizona TCU game. Highly dramatic. Ben Mathurin, absolutely phenomenal, hitting that three to tie it with 12 seconds left. Awesome game. Survive and advance, truly. Major shout out to TCU for what they did. Other game that I really liked, obviously, you got to pick the St. Peter's versus Kentucky game. Come on. Who saw that upset coming? St. Peter's running fantastic. Four out, five out sets. A lot of motion, a lot of moving, a lot of cutting. I saw some shot quality stats. If you follow that on Twitter, it's a pretty fun follow just to see the numbers. And Kentucky, with the quality of shots that they have, should have beaten St. Peter's by at least 25. I believe it was 25. But St. Peter's hung in there, made the plays, knocked off Kentucky. Great game. Only one of a handful of 15-2 upsets. other games I really like, Murray State, San Francisco. If you watched it, it was a mid-major powerhouse. Punches back and forth from Bouye. And then all of the Murray State guards, you can name any one of them. But it felt like Bouye was just taking on the entire Murray State team by himself and dragged it to overtime, and it just kind of fell apart at the end. But that was a highly dramatic game. Another dramatic game is actually one that didn't come down to the buzzer, but it was Michigan-Tennessee. It felt like a heavyweight fight, and Tennessee caught one of the worst breaks ever, and the Brooks hitting a baseline running hook shot layup. And that was just a great slugfest of two Power Five conferences in the second round. And you usually don't get that kind of heavyweight battle, but it was a great battle and a great game. I love that game. Memphis-Gonzaga, can't go anymore without saying this. Memphis-Gonzaga might have been even more entertaining than Michigan-Tennessee, but the speed of the game, the flow of it. If you watched all of these games, everything you felt after this was, boy, college basketball is really boring. And if it wasn't a close game at the end, or the underdog had a chance, or the underdog was leading and the Power Five team was trying to come back on the underdog, if you take a step back, the games were boring. Everyone played slow. Nobody can make a shot. I mean, how often if you looked up and checked the scores at the top of your TV and you saw 10 minutes in the game, the score was 11-14. It happened, I would say 80% of the games were that way. And so to see a game like Memphis-Gonzaga, where it was up and down, there was no stopping. Everyone got mad at Penny at not using his timeouts, but who cares? What's he going to draw up? We'll talk about that in a little bit too, maybe. It was up and down, pure athleticism, offensive execution, defensive execution, hustle. It was a fantastic game. And that's like, this is what college basketball needs to be. Too many people are so afraid to lose their job, and I get it, because you've got like 2 or 3 years, and if it's not working, you're done. So nobody will try anything. Nobody is a risk taker in college basketball, but you had two teams who were just going out there and playing, and it was like playing pickup, and it was a lot of fun, and it was a very high level. I loved it. Another cup, I don't want to include Illinois-Chattanooga because it was such an ugly, you want to talk about ugly game. But it was very dramatic because Chattanooga had the last shot. And I thought for sure that Smith was going to make that shot to knock off Illinois. Illinois got extremely lucky. Another team, UCLA versus Akron, got extremely lucky that Akron went absolutely cold and were not getting the benefit of the whistle at the end. And they hit some key shots and barely escape. Two really, really ugly in the mud games that the higher seed just fortunately get out of. But those are kind of some of the bigger games. I know there's a lot more games that people like, hey, well, what about this one? But these are the ones that stuck out to me as, if you want to talk about the class of college basketball, this was the class of the first and second round. So love these games. Let's hope we get more of these Sweet 16 and not the 59-62 drag outs where it's quote unquote offensive execution. Can you execute the best? And more free flowing and up and down, and let's have some more fun. Let's get some points going in here, but let's get to the actual stats update that we did for KenPom. I mean, we called for upsets from the beginning or at towards the end of the upset chat that we have with Brandon. I said, you need to pick at minimum six of these because the average is about seven every tournament. Well, this is how wild this tournament is going to be. We had 10 of them. We had 10 upsets in round one. Three out of the four 11 seeds won. Two out of the four 12 seeds won. And three out of the four 9 seeds won. So you only had one 10 seed, and St. Peter's is a 15 seed upsetting. But the 11 seeds were doing work this year. It feels even more common that an 11 seed upsets a 6 now than the classic 5-12. But the 9 seeds, that's a pretty standard one as well. So 11 seeds doing their work, three out of four, and two of those 11 seeds made the Sweet 16. So major props to them. looking at the teams that we had talked about as I was for sure going to pick these for a bracket no matter what, all of them at lost outright. And the criteria that we use for that, we use top 75 offense, top 90 percentage offensive rebound, 3-point percentage, and KenPom top 60. KenPom top 60. And we added in if they were higher ranked KenPom than they were by the basketball NCAA basketball committee. So I went with those teams that were ranked higher in KenPom than the NCAA basketball committee. And all of them lost. And it wasn't particularly close. I mean, San Francisco was at least overtime. Loyola played awful, the worst that anyone's probably ever played, even including a 16 seed in the NCAA tournament. Virginia Tech was back and forth for a while, but they kind of just fell flat at the end. Davidson was one of those right on the edge. We'll talk about the officiating in a second. That could not get, that lost by one to Michigan State and what would probably be talked about at what happened at the end of that. But teams that did win, of the markers that we had, were they four markers? Memphis had four. That was a guarantee. That won for sure. One of the auto bets that actually won. Michigan was going to be an auto bet for me, but I didn't do the KenPom ranking, so I can't include them. They had three markers. Notre Dame had three markers. They, of course, lost tonight to Texas Tech in a game that I think they should have actually won. They fell apart at the end. Texas Tech finished the game with like 10 free throws and one dunk as their final basket. Like their final 12 points, I believe, is 9 or 10 free throws and one dunk. And Notre Dame just fell apart. TCU, who just lost in that game, had two markers. Miami, who won and beat a 2 seed in Auburn, had two markers, and theirs was just offense. Their top 75 KenPom offense, and they shoot better than 35% from three. And boy, you could tell it watching that game. Iowa State had one. They had the fortune. I thought LSU with a interim coach with Will laid out would be more focused. Nope, they're just bad. And they're very overrated, just like the SEC is, just like a lot of these power conference. Maybe I shouldn't pick on the SEC because it's not a just specific SEC problem. All Power Five conferences are overrated and they get the benefit of the doubt. They have better teams, quote unquote. They have more money, so they get higher seating. And it is what it is. It's more revenue making for the committee. And eventually, those teams are going to advance and make it towards the end of the tournament. So the committee gets what they want. But you should never just auto bet any of these power conferences, because when you see it on the court, people realize there's not that big of a difference. There really isn't. So other teams like New Mexico State, they won. They had one marker. Richmond, one marker. St. Peter's had one marker. Creighton had one marker. The kind of ironic thing about this is 6 out of the 10 that pulled the upset, they were ranked in the KenPom top 60. So 60% winner if we found the right ones. Of course, we auto bet the KenPom added KenPom higher than the committee. And that may be where we missed it instead of just focusing on the KenPom top 60. The hard part about that is that we had 15 teams of these lower seeds or these higher seeds that would have been candidates for KenPom top 60. So the chance of us picking those 6 out of 10 or 6 out of 15 correctly, very low. That's why we added that extra layer of the higher KenPom ranking than the committee. And it just didn't work out this year, but I guarantee you we will still stick on it for next year. 4 out of the 10 top 90 offensive rebound percentage, 5 out of 10 top 75 offense, 3 out of 10 had the 3-point shooting 35% or above. So what's interesting to me about that, what the teams actually won, is that 3-point shooting actually was not as key of a marker to find an upset candidate as some of these other, like being a top 60 KenPom team, offensive rebounding, and just having a top 75 offense. So 3-point shooting, vastly important. You know, as if you're a college basketball fan, you probably also watch the NBA. You know how 3-point shooting is in the NBA. It's what everybody wants to do. It's the game changer, the thing that can completely change the flow of an NBA game. Not so much here in college basketball. Now, it does help, obviously. You need it if you're going to pull off an upset or if you're going to advance, because you're going to have those moments like tonight in Arizona TCU when you're down by three and you have to go get a basket and you trust your star to go get you a three-pointer. But in overall, not a huge indicator when you're looking for in an upset candidate. But I do think it is a big marker that you need to look for in someone to make a deep run into the tournament past the first round. So that's kind of looking at the KenPom stuff that we look for first round matchup or upsets. So that was a kind of a check-in on that. So the teams that we have left after tonight, obviously we have Iowa State and Miami playing against each other. St. Peter's still alive. Michigan's still alive. And that does it for the upset candidates. So that's for the upset candidates. Let's get into the rest of these teams who are the championship qualifiers. We did give you three and two asterisk team last year that are last week that were going to win the NCAA championship based on historical markers. We lost two of those guaranteed champions. We lost Baylor and Auburn in round two. That's how wild this and crazy this tournament has been. This could be one of those years where the markers just don't apply. We could get a team outside of a four seed that could win the championship. And it would be a very, very rare instance. I can't think of one recent besides seven seed UConn. There might have been one in recent history, but the last team I can remember that was a four seed or below, which is one of the markers, was UConn. And that was what, almost 10 years ago now, or maybe 10 or more years ago now. So this is just kind of the tournament that we have. The team that we have left as a bona fide championship candidate, and their defense is actually slipping, is Arizona. And our two asterisk teams, Gonzaga and UCLA, still alive. So very interesting things to look at, but Arizona is the team left that you got to look at. Gonzaga, UCLA, also to consider. So those are the three teams that are going to win the NCAA championship unless something wild happens, which we've seen can happen, especially the UCLA have an injury to Jaime Jaquez. Who knows if he's going to be ready for Friday or Thursday whenever they play. Injuries are a big deal here. So this tournament could really get flipped. A lot of the markers are still in place, but things could get flipped upside down very, very quickly. So let's get to move on to past championship. Let's get to complaint corner a little bit. I'll try not to spend too long on this, but I think it needs to be said. Obviously, I think everyone on Twitter, Facebook, if you were watching with your buddies, the biggest thing you noticed rooting for these teams is the officiating. I know. You've heard it a million times. You've complained about it a million times. You probably don't want to hear about it again. Well, sorry. There's things that I have to mention about specifically about the officiating. Yes, it's all over the map. It's not consistent. At one half, you can be physical. Ask Memphis. And the second half, you can't be physical. Ask Memphis again. This is the inconsistency. And it kind of gets to a point here that I have at the end of this complaint corner. But there's a few things about the officiating that just needs to be done. Like these are rules that need to be changed that officials should stop falling for. Number one, charges in the post. If you're getting backed down by a post player or a bigger guard than you, and you quote unquote take a shot in the chest and fall backwards, should never be called a charge. You should never be bailed out about being in the wrong position. That's the most backwards thing about basketball in general, is the NBA is trying to do this thing where it's freedom. The offense can kind of get wherever they want. But this is impeding offense. And why are we trying to make the game more unwatchable? College basketball during the season is unbearable to watch. And this is the freedom of movement stuff that you need to get rid of. This fake charge flop in the post. Not a lot of teams do this anyways. There's not a ton of teams that they throw the ball down there and just bang in the post. So it's not like it would be a big issue anyways, but anytime you're guarding a post player and you just beat and you're too small and you're too soft and you're too weak. And the first thing you do is when the guy backs you down, you flop. you should never get a charge call for that. It should always be a blocking foul. And I'll add one too. It should be a shot and possession. You bet. Give me a technical for flopping in the post. We have enough of that in basketball already. Quit adding to it. To add to that with charges, what is a charge anymore? I mean, people can move. I thought you had to be completely still, but apparently if you're running full speed, stick your feet together and then lean to the right, that's considered standing still. And then the guy hits your right shoulder when you're leaning, still called a charge. I don't understand. What is a charge anymore? I mean, get rid of charges. You should not be able to slide underneath. I get there's a restricted area, but these are athletes, not high school players, not elementary girls. Like, these are athletes who are jumping from outside of the restricted area. And if you're running to take a charge underneath the guy who's already in the air, I don't think it should ever be a charge. Sorry. It should be a shot and a ball. Everything should be one shot and a possession. That's what you should get for trying to take a charge. I get it. It's hustle. It's the DNA of college basketball. The guys that play hard, you know, they're not the top talent, but they hustle. And I get it. You don't want to get rid of those guys, but come on. Sliding under a guy who's already in the air is more dangerous. I mean, it's just more dangerous. We should get rid of this completely. What are we doing? The last thing is this. I've seen this a lot, which is kind of weird that I've started to notice it now. But why are we calling shot clock violations when the defense obviously has the ball and is out on a run out? Why are we punishing defense who just did their job, held a team for 30 seconds, which to me, you should never be held for 30 seconds on offense. You're 18 to 22. Some of these guys are 23, 24 years old, and you can't find a shot in 30 seconds. First off, what are we doing? Second off, why are we punishing the team who just did the DNA of the NCAA, quote unquote, grinded out a defensive possession, and then we're going to hurt them by not letting them get their wide open run out because we have to call the shot clock violation? I get it. If the possession is not in hand and it's a loose ball and both teams are fighting for it, but I've probably seen a half dozen where the defense clearly has it, is running out 3-on-1 and has numbers, and they still call the shot clock violation, make them reset. What are we doing? Come on. The couple more things about complaint corner, the timeouts. I look, teams each have 4 timeouts. They can use any time in the game. I know some teams don't use them. I get it. Some teams, you lose one if you don't use it by whatever for the second half. Okay, whatever. But why are we starting out with 4 timeouts for each team? We have 4 media timeouts each half. There's 8 timeouts right there from media timeouts. Each team has 4 as well. They take all of them. There's 16 timeouts in a basketball game. Then we also have review, 2 minutes and under. If we get a couple of those, you're talking about 20 to 22 potential timeouts in a basketball game. And the review ones, I understand. If it's close, you need to go look at the monitor. But maybe coaches don't need 4 timeouts. If you can't figure out and get your team to go in a potential 20 timeouts, maybe there's just an issue with your team or an issue with your coaching. I think a lot of people are going to have complaints about this. It completely stops the flow of everything. That's why everything is so stop, start, stop, start. There's no flow. NBA has this, and it's starting to get this way too with all the reviews and the challenges, and the teams still get all these timeouts. I mean, nobody, I get it. You need your commercial breaks. You got to pay for sponsorship. I understand, but you're hurting your own product, and it's been doing it for a while. And now I'm actually going to say something about it. So we should not have 20 to 22 timeouts in a game. We just shouldn't. Like TCU, Arizona, I want the drama. But by the time we go through our 24th timeout, I'm kind of done. Like, a college basketball game should not be 3 hours. It just shouldn't. It's not baseball. So I don't watch baseball. So don't turn basketball into that. So let's do something with the timeouts. It's just way too much. It's just too much. Lastly, maybe this isn't complaint, more of an observation, but did we feel anything that games were fixed? No? And any games, like if I throw out Michigan State Davidson, fixed? NCAA very invested in a Tom Izzo, Coach K final game. You don't think that affected anything? You think that played out as fairly as could be? The same with like Memphis Gonzaga. It's not the reason Memphis lost, but we're looking at what? Gonzaga's in the double bonus before they get that run of 4 or 5 in a row with 10 minutes left to play. And we're just supposed to be like, yeah, you're right. Like, Memphis has been putting pressure on the rim and them the entire game, but they didn't foul for 11 minutes. Like, not saying that they're fixed. Maybe I should say that referees and the NCAA know that a lot of these mid-majors and lower seeds are at a big disadvantage because they do not have the resources of a full roster to kind of match athletes. So the way they can kind of influence, is what we'll say, a mid-major from not pulling an upset is foul trouble. If you can get a key person on a mid-major team in foul trouble, that's a huge hit versus someone like Texas, who has 4 guys that all do the same, about the same thing. So there is less of a drop-off from a power conference bench than a mid-major bench. So I think fouls is, I think a lot of these games are influenced by potential matchups, and you've got one of the premier potential screw jobs ever with Coach K's final season coming up. I mean, you can even talk about Michigan State Duke. Like, what was Tom Izzo doing at the end of the game? Like, he takes out his point guard when he's down 5 and needs a 5, like he needs to create something. And so he puts in a bigger guy who doesn't do anything and they kill the clock for 26. Like, come on. It's just suspicious. So a lot of these games is like, yes, mid-majors most of the time aren't going to win and finish things. But it gets pretty curious to me when there's a slew of fouls against a power brand name, quote unquote, with a large fan base, when all of a sudden that team they're against, a lower seed or an equivalent mid-major, or an equivalent Power 5 conference with a lesser viewership, all of a sudden their best player gets 2 or 3 fouls within 3 minutes. I don't know. Just kind of weird. Not saying that you're doing it, NCAA, but it feels kind of odd. So there was a lot of games like that, and it just kind of is what it is. So let's wrap up Complaint Corner. That's enough complaining, because this NCAA, the first 2 rounds, we have had some phenomenal games. This is what's going to happen when you put in 68 teams. You're bound to get some matchups where it's super intriguing. That's why we love March Madness, the number on the side. We love to see an 11 beat a 6. Love to see a 14 beat a 3. Like, these are a 16 beat a 1. Only had it once, but we loved watching it, even though it was a blowout. So this is what it is about March Madness. NCAA's got us. We're hooked on this. Let's just figure out some of these things and try not to. And we just have to put the blinders on for the obvious ones where it's like, oh, that's kind of fishy, kind of fishy. So here's the final thing. Let's get to overrated and underrated. These are just kind of things I've seen or observations that I've made throughout the first 2 rounds. So overrated, driving across half court to call a timeout. Besides tonight with Arizona TCU, and they drew up that beautiful backdoor play to Ben Mathurin when they need it, I have not seen an ATO or after timeout work yet. So why are college coaches, I'm sorry, you're just not, like, I'm not saying you're dumber than NBA guys. You just don't have the quality of players to do what NBA players can do off of ATOs, and even a lot of times on ATOs with NBA players don't work. So the chance of you actually getting them to work, like Tom Izzo is a perfect example. Usually he's a guy that I've noticed in the past, like if team scores, he lets his team go down and play. Tonight he called like 3 timeouts to set up a half court set, and they all did not work. It's just overrated. Why are we doing it? Like, stop doing it. Just play. You're not, you know, you're not Brad Stevens. You're not these guys. You just don't have the players to execute, you know, after ATOs. You just don't. So that's overrated. Another thing that's overrated, stalling a free throw shooter by walking around. Like, you're not icing him by standing in front of him and pretending to talk to the two guys on the wings, or walking by him and almost touching him to go beyond the three-point line, or switching sides on the free throw lane. It's not working. Just stop doing it. It's overrated. Showing the coach's wife in the stands all the time. Like, she's already rich. She lives a cupcake life. She doesn't do anything, probably. Like, she might do, she might work with a foundation or something and help out in the community. Like, she might be a great person. I get it. That's awesome. But we don't need to show her in the crowd every 5 seconds. Like, it's overrated. Sorry. Head taps. The motion of tapping the top of your head when anyone is within the vicinity of your teammate when he dunks. 90% of these aren't head tap quality. But every time you see someone dunk and someone is running by, you get the goofy white kid on the other bench who's tapping the top of his head. Stop it. It's overrated. We've only had a couple true head taps. Those are acceptable. Jabari Smith dunked on somebody and got dunked on. Ben Mathurin dunked on somebody. We've only had a few. The rest of them, quit tapping your head. You look like an idiot. Stop doing it. The last one, the phrase, we don't need a three here. This sticks out in a lot of college basketball games because most of the analysts for college basketball are former ex players who are, how I say delicately, old. They're old. And maybe that was great that you don't need a three in this situation, because when you played, there actually wasn't a 3-point line. The one that sticks out to me is, I don't remember the announcer's name. I do remember him from a previous game where he complained about this, but Memphis Gonzaga at the end, when they were down by a leaf, I believe four, and they shoot a three, doesn't go in. He's like, oh, you got to take that to the basket now, blah, blah, blah. Let's play out the scenario. Okay. Let's say Memphis drives, goes into the basket against Chet Holmgren, 7'1" shot blocker who had, I believe, 4 or 5, maybe more blocks in that Memphis game. Let's say you do score over him. You're still down two. So guess what? You still have to foul. So when you're talking about 10 or less seconds, you're going to foul him. He makes 2 free throws. You're down 4 again. What are you going to do? Go down, make another layup, and then foul, and it's 3 seconds left. Then if they go up 3 and they miss one, guess what? They're going to foul you. So you have to cut into that margin to make it 1. So it's a 1-possession game. And for some reason, old people who announce these games do not get it. Yes, I'm looking at you, Avery Johnson. These announcers, I quit saying it. Don't need a three here. Most of the time they do. There are some times when they don't, but most of the time in the situations, they need a three. It's better for them long-term if they go for the three adverse to the two, especially situationally with Memphis going against Chet. You just had to have a three. And it just made sense with the time crunch that they were under. The other game that I remember that announcer calling is the Georgia State over Baylor game. You go watch that highlight where RJ Hunter hits that game winning three to beat Baylor. He's complaining about RJ Hunter not going to the basket. Who would have thought? And this was what, 6 or 7 years ago? And they still let this guy call basketball games. Is there no one else? There's no other talent, color commentator, who can call basketball games. No one. We're going to keep going with this guy. Okay. So if RJ Hunter does what this guy wanted him to do, he goes to the basket, tie game. And even if he finishes against Baylor, who had Torian Prince and a bunch of athletic freaks on their team. Yeah. Good luck going to the paint and finish. No, he got that three for the win. Maybe not the best shot, but it gave us a great moment, but not to this guy. He's on call saying, push it to the basket, push to the basket. What are they doing? And we letting this guy call games. So that's overrated, underrated. It's probably not underrated to most people, but multiple ball handlers. Most people want, I would say everyone who watches basketball wants multiple ball handlers, but like the teams that upset anybody or advanced, the ball handlers, the multiple shooters, the multiple attacking from the wing. It's the way basketball is going and the way it should be. So no more post presence teams, quote unquote. So sorry, Illinois, like you're just not going anywhere. And this is the last time I pick you to make a Sweet 16 ever. So sorry. The true throw it in the post, let the big man work is toast. And if you're backing a team like that, you're probably toast, who just throw it into the basket and or throw it into the post and hope that big man scores for you all the time. But that's underrated. Multiple ball handlers, mustaches, big mustache here. The one that sticks out the most is St. Peter's guard. I completely just forgot his name, but I feel like it starts with a D. I can't remember. I don't want to say Delbert because I know that's not right, but wickedly awesome mustache. Pretty interesting. St. Mary's really rocking some interesting facial hair. And I thought they had a real chance to make Sweet 16 before they threw up an absolute dud from UCLA from about the 10-minute mark in the first half on. But mustache, good luck. If I would have looked through all the team rosters heading into March Madness, I probably would just pick the mustache, like the best-looking mustache on the teams between the two teams. And I probably would have done pretty good in the bracket this year if I'd have done that. Just kind of like just picking mascots. Probably did pretty good if you just pick mascots to win the first round or two. Offensive rebounding, like TCU, the offense sucks, but they have multiple ball handlers and they just offensive rebound Arizona to death. Arizona, like the biggest team in America, most athletic, biggest team in America, and ran them off the offensive rebounds. Now, Arizona did the same thing to them when it counted at the end, but offensive rebounding has proven for at least March Madness teams that it can completely save you in the tournament and it can cause a huge upset if you'll offensive rebound. So underrated, I feel like a lot of people are kind of getting away from it, but it's really sticks out in March Madness, the offensive rebounding. Coaches dancing. I think that's actually underrated. I know some people don't like it, but I actually like it when the coaches dance. I think it's kind of funny. Like my favorite is Roy Williams going into, you know, it's GIF or meme, like legend now, him going into locker room on that little dance. So, I mean, Kelvin Sampson ripped his shirt off. Like, yeah, I'll take all of it. I mean, Rick Barnes didn't dance, but he's talking about pushing Pete. Like, come on. Who doesn't enjoy that? Underrated for sure. And the last one here, when it gets down to it, it's just crowd noise. And I think everyone knows that crowd noise is probably properly rated, but I'm going to say underrated. When it gets within 4 minutes and it's a close game, my TV goes up 30 decibels. Maybe not decibels. That's probably not an accurate reflection of a conversion of volume, but it goes from a 15 volume to a 35 for me. So I love the crowd noise, the fans hanging on every shot, turnover, block, offensive rebound, free throw. It's the best thing about March Madness, and I love being able to cheer with it. So those things are underrated for round one and round two. This will kind of wrap up our postmortem for round one and round two. So on to the Sweet 16. Like I said, Brandon will be with me at some point this week, either come out Tuesday or Wednesday. We'll talk about the Sweet 16 games, give you some picks for that. So I hope everybody enjoyed the weekend. We will be back with NBA soon. Don't worry. I know. Waiting for the NBA talk. There's only 10 games left in the regular season for most teams. We'll be talking about NBA playoffs very, very, very soon. So that's exciting as well. This is a great couple months for me. Everything kind of bleeds in together. And it's like a 2 or 3 month high for me on basketball. So hope everyone enjoys the week. We'll see you guys for the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight.